Florida leaders make bold moves to find a solution to the nation's immigration stalemate. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9, and thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we're always live on the radio at 9. Also, make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And just ahead, how moderate Republicans from Florida in Congress are trying to force a vote on immigration this week. There's so much happening around this issue, and we want you to get on the line right now at 549-2937. Then later, we'll tell you about Faces to Remember, a project to preserve the faces and stories of local war heroes and Holocaust survivors before they pass away. Plus, the ribbon will be cut this week on the new Sulzbacher Village, providing shelter for local women and kids in need. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, moderate Republicans from Florida are part of a group in Congress trying this week to force a vote on immigration and the fate of the nation's dreamers, as they're called. Several House Republicans have signed on to what's known as a discharge petition. Now, it's intended to force votes on a series of immigration measures that are stalled out in Congress, including legislation that would protect DACA recipients. That's Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. The Dreamers' fate has been in limbo for months now. Led by moderate Republican members from South Florida and others, this group has joined with their Democratic colleagues in Congress in an effort to pass legislation to protect the Dreamers, something a vast majority of Americans say in polls that they want, protected status for this group of young people. So what can we expect out of Washington this week, and how critical is the role of voices from Florida? What else is going on with the immigration issue in our area? We have a lot to discuss this morning, and we're pleased to welcome by phone Ted Hutchinson. He's an attorney and leader of the public policy group Forward Florida that focuses on immigration and other issues. Hi, Ted. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Melissa. Thank you for having me back.
Great to have you. And joining us here in studio, Jacksonville immigration attorney Susan Pye. Susan, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Melissa.
And here's our question to callers. What do you think of this move in Congress to force a vote on immigration this week? What are your thoughts about the Dreamers and the immigration debate in America and in Florida? Get on the line now at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, or you can weigh in on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. Ted Hutchinson of Forward Florida, let's begin with you. First, could you explain what's happening on Capitol Hill, this move to put forward a discharge petition? What is that, and what will that do?
So thank you again, Melissa, for having me back to talk about this real important issue. So this discharge petition, which was filed by Congressman Carlos Covello from South Florida, right here in Miami, it would force a vote on several immigration bills, four immigration bills. The Good Lad Bill, which is a more conservative-leaning bill, the DREAM Act, which we're all familiar with, the USA Act, which is the bill that was put together by moderate Will Hurd and Pete Aguilar. It's a bipartisan bill that we think would have a lot of success if it was voted on, and then a bill of the Speaker's choice. And so what this is really about, Melissa, is frustration. You know, I think the last time I was on here speaking with you was right after we had a fly-in in D.C. in January. And, you know, I was optimistic. You know, we talked about, you know, the chances of a permanent legislative fix. And, you know, the reason I was optimistic was because House Republican leadership said they wanted to do something. And so I think the inaction over the last couple months since those fly-ins, since those conversations, has spurned this discharge petition, and it's no surprise that Carlos Covello has led it. You know, he's been pretty consistent in his support of the DACA population. He's been consistent in voting down any budget bill that didn't include protections for Dreamers. So it's not a surprise at all. And we think that, you know, we're close. I think at the last count, we were at 203 on the discharge petition. So, you know, with a couple more moderate Republicans and, you know, support of the Democratic caucus, there's a good chance this could happen.
More moderate Republicans will be enjoined to sort of peel off and support this and cross the aisle with Democrats. At the same time, we're learning this morning a multimillionaire GOP donor, former Exelon chairman John Rowe. He says he's threatening to choke off any contributions to Republican congressmen who don't find a solution to this. So there's a lot of pressure on House Republicans to force a vote on this Dreamer legislation and immigration more broadly. But Ted Hutchinson, there are also conservative members of Congress, including Florida's own Ron DeSantis and others, members of the House Freedom Caucus, who have taken a very hard line on this. With all of these various factions, is a solution even possible?
You know, and that, I think the key word there is factions. I think the faction led by DeSantis, led by Goodlatte, they don't have the support. I mean, nothing is a certain thing, but, you know, if you look at the numbers right now on the bill that they propose, they don't have enough votes in the House to get there. So if people are serious about finding solutions, the way to go is this moderate route. The way to go is to look at this Pete Aguilar, Will Hurd bill, or look at a Dream Act bill, or just, you know, come up with a solution. You know, get in the room, like you said you were, and do your job. You know, Congress was elected to take tough votes. You know, I understand there's a political side to all this, but at the end of the day, their job is to, you know, fix things. And they fix things by taking votes. And one thing that they can fix is our immigration system.
And give us a call as we talk about immigration and DACA this morning on the show at 549-2937. Susan Pye, you're a Jacksonville immigration attorney. You work with people in a number of situations dealing with visas and immigration. Now, as Congress looks to possibly consider several separate bills, including the DREAM Act and another measure that would provide a pathway to legal status for Dreamers, a measure to improve border security. While these young Dreamers' fate is sort of hanging in limbo, you're dealing with a number of immigration-related issues here in Florida. Clients coming to you because they're in danger of being deported or they have been deported. There are lots of stories to share right here in Jacksonville, Florida, that maybe haven't made headlines as much as the Dreamers, but that it's very much a part of what's happening right now when it comes to immigration. So if you can, I want you to begin by sharing some of the stories that you've been dealing with in recent weeks. What's come across your desk?
There's so much to talk about, but yes, I'll just speak about what's, you know, timely now. And even that is just so alarming. I want to first preface this by saying that the vast majority of the men and women who work for the Department of Homeland Security are just doing their jobs. And I'm former law enforcement, and I have great respect for them. But we do have too many rogue actions or inadequately trained agents that are causing the majority of the problems. So what we're seeing in Jacksonville is a really astoundingly alarming overreach and abuse by certain agents in ICE, Customs, and Border Patrol. And this is right here in Jacksonville. So I'll give you an example. This overreach and abuse, it's so bad that people are dying. And when I say that people are dying as a result of this overreach and abuse, I'm talking about local law enforcement officers like Deputy Eric Oliver, whose death was wholly unnecessary. So he died chasing not even an arrestee on behalf of Border Patrol in Fernandina Beach, and was instantly killed when he ran into heavy traffic, leaving behind a 7-year-old girl having just come back from being deployed overseas. And immigration knows, they know very well, they should never have allowed local law enforcement to chase their suspects or do what they shouldn't have done that resulted in this young man's death.
You're saying that Nassau County Deputy Eric Oliver died unnecessarily at the behest of chasing someone Border Patrol wanted him to chase in Fernandina Beach?
That Border Patrol knows that they didn't have the authority to chase. And so when they call in local law enforcement, it's almost as if they're calling in local law enforcement to do what they know they cannot do. Okay, and people are even surprised that Border Patrol is in Fernandina Beach. Okay, or that Fernandina, or that in Jacksonville, right here in Jacksonville on San Jose Boulevard by 295, you know, that's a 6-lane road, a very dangerous area. People are not crossing the street there, okay?
You have another case you're trying to look into. You say that there's been a vehicular homicide investigation involving a Latino minor who was on a bicycle. What happened in this case?
So on May 1st, and this was inaccurately reported by the media, and Border Patrol is not answering media requests for information. So I find this to be extraordinarily troubling.
What happened?
Border Patrol was here in Jacksonville on San Jose Boulevard. They targeted a kid on a bike. And started questioning him. And the kid panicked and ran into the middle of San Jose Boulevard in early morning traffic, was hit by a truck right in front of a Jacksonville sheriff's officer or community service officer while Border Patrol was against their own policy in hot pursuit of this kid. And so he was hit and struck by a vehicle, and I believe he was brain dead on the scene. And he was later taken off of life support and is now dead. And now I'm searching through death certificates to try to find out who he was.
We're not anywhere near the border. What are Border Patrol agents doing in Jacksonville?
Well, what are they doing in Jacksonville? And what are they doing chasing people based on their appearance? This, you know, they could not have known whether this kid was a kid who's on his way to school or if it's a kid who's on his way to a job, okay? They're here because of this false 100-mile border jurisdiction that Border Patrol has annexed. So basically, the entire state of Florida is considered a border, irrespective of what their definition of border is that gives them jurisdiction to be here. They're not supposed to be doing things like that. You know, what that means, like, to me as a parent who lives close to there in Mandarin, is I don't want Border Patrol to see my son on a bike riding to school. I'm Asian and he's mixed, and mistake him for a Latino or some other minority, okay? And then freak him out, and same thing happens to him. I don't want any more people to die, any more law enforcement, any more kids. And, you know, they should just do what they're supposed to do. They should do. I'm former law enforcement. The basic tenet of being a law enforcement officer is that you cannot break the law to enforce the law. If you cannot adhere to that tenet, then the whole system of law enforcement breaks down and we are no longer a nation of laws.
It's 549-2937 to talk about immigration and the fate of the Dreamers, the DACA recipients in America. Susan Pye, you've also been trying to help people who have legal tourist visas but have been deported or are under threat of deportation. Ted Hutchinson with Forward Florida. All of these anecdotes, and I think what's happening on Capitol Hill this week, speak to the rancor and the ugliness of what's going on with immigration in this country. And so how is your organization Forward working to try to turn down the temperature a little bit, I guess, on this and find solutions?
I think you're right in the sense that the conversation around immigration is contentious, but, you know, I think the support is actually there. You know, I think, you know, I'm not going to quote a bunch of polls, but, you know, if you look at the numbers, I think the overwhelming majority of people support the Dreamers. You know, what we do to sort of, you know, navigate that nastiness, so to speak, is that, you know, we're a truly bipartisan organization. You know, I've been a Democrat all my life personally, but, you know, I work closely, you know, with the office of Congressman Corbello, Ileana Ross-Layton. And, you know, we make our best efforts to sort of put forth stories of successful immigrants, you know, whether in the business sector, tech sector, hospitality industry, what may it be, fashion industry even, you know, so we try to get stories out there that shed a more positive light on, you know, on the contributions that immigrants really make to America and Florida in particular. You know, South Florida, you know, comes to mind. You know, I mean, you can't talk about South Florida without talking about, you know, the Haitian community, the Cuban community, of course. And others from Latin America. So, you know, while the conversation on Capitol Hill, you know, can get contentious at times, I think, you know, when you take a step back, you know, and you're in the community, you know, there's support. You know, you talk to individuals, there's support, you know, for doctors and for dreamers and for doctors that being dreamers. So, you know, I'm not bothered. Well, I am bothered by some negativity, but, you know, I am, you know, I've sort of, you know, found a way to persist through it, you know, and, you know, because I see that we have an opportunity here, we have an opportunity in June to pass something, you know, this chart position that still do, we're 15 more people away from making something, you know, come to the fore. So, you know, I think, and I'm confident, you know, that if we do get this opportunity to vote in the summertime, we can actually pass maybe a Dream Act, some version of it, or the USA Act. So, you know, negativity aside, you know, I have to remain optimistic, you know, because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, and Susan can attest to this, you know, lives are being impacted. You know, Dreamers are losing the authorization to work every day. They're losing their, you know, ability to drive. And so, you know, something has to be done. You know, the president said he wants to do something. Let's do it.
Let's go to some calls now. 549-2937. Tom is at NAS Jax. Hi, Tom. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Melissa. And I'm a big fan of your show. I think you're just terrific. I don't mind saying.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And I like the topic this morning. I'm very concerned about it, myself personally, and so my neighbors, of course. Of course we want the dreamers to come here to the United States and to live a better life. I mean, we're normal human beings. We want other human beings to have every opportunity they can have to lead a good life, of course, and to have room to do that. But I'm just wondering, after listening to the last person to whom you were speaking, not the caller, but the lady on the show, who was telling us about how the laws should be enforced in the United States and so on and so forth, I'm just wondering if we're losing focus, if this protagonist of immigrants here in the United States would please be an activist in the South American and Mexican countries for the human rights and the reasons why people are fleeing in the first place. Don't argue about what the United States law should be. Argue about what the law should be in Honduras and Venezuela and Mexico and Belize and all these other countries these people want to come to the U.S. And why do they want to come here? If they're dreamers, please have your dreams where you are and protest in the streets there and argue on the radio shows there about what the laws should be and fight for the rights of yourself and for your fellow citizens in the country where you are, rather than come here and create all this disturbance.
Okay, thanks, Tom. Susan Pye.
You're welcome.
Whether it's the dreamers who are here already and were actually brought here as young children, or people that have come into the country more recently, in your practice, you deal with all manner of immigration issues. There's so much attention that's being given to the dreamers right now, but it's really just a small piece of what's going on with immigration. As you mentioned a minute ago, ICE, Immigration, Customs and Enforcement, and Border Patrol agents, who your contention is, are overreaching, including right here on the streets of Northeast Florida. And so what about his comments?
I can sympathize absolutely, you know, with the caller. We're experiencing, a global migration crisis. And so, yes, asylum was never meant to be a blank check. Okay, so that doesn't mean that anybody who would like to come here can come here. But I need to disclose that my father was a North Korean refugee. He was rescued by the American military. Mm-hmm. And, that's how he came to the United States. And now his progeny are lawyers, doctors, teachers, U.S. Armed Forces. And actually, that is the reason that I take on certain cases that I take, because my family has a great debt to pay to this country. So when, our recent story about the Chinese-American family of the U.S. military Apache pilot here, mm-hmm. I took his case because it's part of me paying my debt back to this country. And his parents-in-law came here on a legal visa, did everything the right way, okay? Abided by the law. But like a recent dreamer who was also subject to what happened to them, not the entire agency, but, whoever the bad apples are, they manufactured false confessions from both a dreamer, okay, who was falsely accused of being a gang member. And dreamers, by the way, are already here. They're not coming here. They were brought here, usually through no fault of their own, sometimes as infants. Oftentimes, they don't even know they're not American citizens until they're turned 16, okay? Mm-hmm. And by the way, there are people like that who are born overseas who are like my age or, older, like in their 60s. Elderly white women who come to my office all the time and say, hey, I couldn't get a passport because they're telling me I'm not a U.S. citizen. What do you mean I'm not a U.S. citizen? That's a child that was born on a military base to an American couple who didn't do the paperwork they were supposed to do 60 years ago. They consider that woman to be just as illegal as somebody who just jumps the border yesterday, and they treat her as such. So this couple, they came to me. Their parents had been here on a cruise, their last family cruise, to spend with their 3 and 4 year old grandchildren, because the grandfather is dying of stage 4 cancer, and with a legal visa, and even he and his wife were deported unceremoniously yesterday. Now we're trying to take care of that, Okay, with the dreamer, the agent made the dreamer write a confession in pencil. I mean, this overreach is so egregious that they just went in and erased parts of the confession to pretextually generate a confession in order to deport this dreamer.
So you're saying the Trump administration's commitment to securing the border, enforcing immigration laws, in your view, it's leading to, in some cases, abuse and overreach.
It's leading to, that, absolutely. And, you know, people don't understand. They need to go into the, to the federal district courts on the border and just watch or look on Pacer. And they're going to see something that you never would have seen under the Obama administration. Let me make this clear. Okay. Illegal immigration right now is completely incentivized over legal immigration, because legal immigrants like my clients, the Chinese grandparents, you know, they're being treated horribly. They're taken into custody illegally, made to sign false confessions. Okay. And they're doing everything the right way. Okay. Including asylum seekers. They're going to be taken into custody. They're going to be separated from their children. They're going to sit in jail for 3, 6, 9 months, sometimes 4 years. Okay. But if you come into this country illegally under Sessions, DOJ, you will get a very sweet plea deal that you never would have seen under the Obama administration. You could even come in as a repeat illegal border crosser, a felony, get that felony dismissed, plead to a petty offense, and serve 1 day in jail and pay a $10 fine. So yeah, they are prosecuting a whole bunch of cases, but it might be the same person 27 times.
That's not something that I think is the popular narrative right now around this issue. That's not the perception that most people have.
That's not part of the branding campaign, but that's a fact.
All right, lots of calls on this. Let's go to Debbie on the South Side. Go ahead, Debbie.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My response is to the gentleman who said immigrants need to stay in their countries and protest there and not to come in this country and do negative things. Not every immigrant comes in the United States to do bad things, to protest on the streets. And so many people come in this country, yes, for better opportunities. And not only do they make a difference for themselves and for their lives, but they also give back to the communities. We have so many immigrants who are employers. They are lawyers. They are people who have worked so hard from nothing to make something, not only for themselves, but even for the communities that they live in this country. So when we generalize every immigrant and we make it look like everybody is a bad person, then that's not fair to so many people. And this is a country where it was built by immigrants. And some of all these people who are fighting immigration, their generations back then also were immigrants. So to me, what I fail to understand is, especially after I've met a young man this morning at the post office, and he's been here for 32 years. He's married to an American, born American, and beautiful young white lady. They have a 2-year-old and a 4.5-year-old. And he was telling me this morning that the mother stays at home because they cannot take their children. He's afraid of taking his children to daycare or even to pre-K because he thinks the children will be profiled, will be abused because he's a foreigner. And I'm wondering, what are we doing to ourselves and to the communities? What are we doing to the generations to come? One more thing is, just not too long ago, I saw where America now, with these new generations, we're not having too many kids. Well, where do we go years from now when we don't even have enough people in the workforce?
Yeah, thanks, Debbie. Thank you, Debbie.
Thank you
for that. And Phil in San Marco emails the show saying much the same. He writes, "What I never hear mentioned is the investment we as a society have in the dreamers. We have educated and assimilated them into our society, removing them when they were just about to enter the workforce and begin to pay dividends to society back. It's tantamount to paying someone to take your 401k away right before you retire." So, Ted Hutchinson, that's certainly the case that the moderate Republicans in Congress are trying to make, including several from Florida. House Speaker Paul Ryan is trying to keep this fractious Republican caucus together. There's such a split between the moderates and the conservatives on this. It's said to be so divisive that he could lose his speakership over this. And so we'll have to see what plays out in the coming days on this discharge petition. What are your thoughts about how this is affecting the leadership of the Congress? It's that serious a divide.
I think you're right. I think what it's done is frozen the leadership. And I think that's why you see this discharge petition, right? You know, we've had these conversations going back to, you know, 2017. And what's said in meetings, you know, the complete opposite happens, you know, over the next several months. And so, you know, we're going to have a new speaker. You know, the current speaker is getting ready to retire. And so, you know, most likely it's going to be between the number two and three guys in the House right now, Majority Leader McCarthy and Mr. Scalise. You know, I'm not exactly sure how that's going to play out. But, you know, I think what I rest my laurels on is the fact that even with that, you know, that divided, you know, Republican caucus, you know, we still have the votes to possibly get this done. So, you know, listen, at the end of the day, you know, you're leaders and leaders have to lead. And, you know, there's no running from the issue. There's no backing away from the fact that we have to do this. You know, a lot of this, you know, right now this is all tied up in the Ninth Circuit. And, you know, so there's some temporary reprieve for the DACA recipients, you know, but, you know, you're still going to have, at the end of the day, you know, a temporary solution. That's all this is, you know, so we need to find a legislative fix.
Okay. And Shauna tweets the show, is there any way to get more of the case studies and stories of what's actually going on with legal immigration into the public awareness? Stories like what your guest is revealing, Susan Pye.
Yes. I mean, you can follow me on Twitter under my name, at Susan Pye, S-U-S-A-N-P-A-I. And then you can follow all the people that I follow. And I think that's a good way to get, you know, the news that you want about these sort of stories that are going on, so people become aware. I did want to make a point about national security threats. Okay, a lot of people don't know about the EB-5 program. You'll see one of the congressmen who's really pushing, you know, for a vote on some action on the farm bill or whatever version of the immigration bill he's supporting is Mark Amadi. Now, you know, I know a lot of these names of the people who are pushing, you know, for a vote, but they're not pushing because they want to come to some kind of resolution and magically pass, you know, comprehensive immigration report. They're pushing because national security threats to the United States, they are not jumping the border wall. Okay, they're writing a big fat check, okay, to American businesses like the Kushner companies who can't obtain traditional financing under the EB-5 program. Those are the national security threats to the United States that has been proven for decades, and that's under a system that should have sunsetted over 20 years ago, okay? And Amadi is one of the congressmen who is the official friend of EB-5 investors. The majority of them were traditionally Iranians and now majority Chinese. But the people that they let into the country with a direct path to citizenship, and by the way, they're not buying their citizenship like certain countries, poor countries, sell citizenship like Malta in order to get EU access. We are giving these people citizenship for free. Okay, they don't pay us. We give it to them because all they have to do is loan a troubled company like the Kushner's 666 building, $500,000 or $1 million. They get it back in 5 years. They get their golden ticket visa called an EB-5. And they and their entire family can come into the United States, even if they have been sanctioned financially by OFAC.
Mm-hmm. That came up several months ago. I think Jared Kushner's sister ran into some trouble speaking before a group of investors overseas and in effect dangling the opportunity of this EB-5 visa if they bought into company.
You know, for goodness sake, you know, the last time they came into the United States and met with Trump on the EB-5 issue was the same day that the feds raided a Chinese EB-5 national, okay, who was on China's equivalent of their FBI's most wanted list.
This, I think, shows just a little bit of a window into the complexity of this debate. And I've been following you on Twitter for a while. And I think people need to follow you because it shows that there's so much more to what's going on around this issue than the typical narrative of people crossing the border illegally. This is so complex. And I hope you'll come back on the show again another time and talk about it with us some more.
I really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you to you and your audience.
Yeah, she's a Jacksonville immigration attorney, Susan Pye. Her website is strongvisa.com. Also with us, Ted Hutchinson. He is the Florida leader of the group Forward US. Ted, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you, as always, and thank you for having me back.
And we'll continue to follow what happens with that vote in Washington and Florida's role. But meanwhile, much more still ahead later, opening the doors to the city's new Sulzbacher Village. That's happening this week. But up next, a compelling new project honors this area's veterans and Holocaust survivors with incredible images. We'll tell you about the Faces to Remember project right after this.
Community Hospice and Palliative Care. Since 1979, the compassionate guide for more than 200,000 patients facing advanced illness in Northeast Florida. Today, serving 16 counties, including yours. Available 24/7 to help you and your loved one. More at choosecommunityhospice.com. Westminster St. Augustine, an active senior living community located in World Golf Village, offers residents maintenance-free living with access to golf and tennis, dining, housekeeping, and 24-hour security, plus supportive and healthcare services. More at westminstersaugustinefl.org.
Olympian Jamie Dancher says her abuser was USA Gymnastics physician Larry Nassar, but she doesn't think he's the only person guilty.
I believe that this abuse was allowed to happen because many adults at USA Gymnastics and in various gyms throughout the country kept Larry Nassar's secret.
Now U.S. Olympic executives try to persuade Congress they can do better. The latest on the next Morning Edition. Tomorrow morning, starting at 5 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Hi, I'm Andrew Wickman, host of Blues Horizon. The best in classic and modern blues is now on twice a week. Blues Horizon, Monday and Wednesday nights at 11. Right here on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world, your music.
What's up?
The WJCT HD4 pop-up jazz station is now on the air. The Jacksonville Jazz Festival is almost here, so swing out with jazz 24 hours a day on 89.9 HD4 until the jazz festival ends. Like what you hear? Send your comments to music at WJCT.org and enjoy the WJCT HD4 pop-up jazz station.
Welcome back. It's called The Faces to Remember, a project that highlights the stories of local Holocaust survivors and also thousands of Filipino soldiers who served in the U.S. Armed Forces in the Pacific Theater during World War II. Now, most of us know the story of the Holocaust survivors, but this other history isn't as well known. That's why renowned local photographer Agnes Lopez decided to preserve it with some very compelling portraits. There's a large Filipino community here in Jacksonville, one of the largest in the Southeast, and Faces to Remember honors their service as well. Agnes Lopez, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
It's so good to see you. Now, you're of Filipino descent, but even you only recently discovered the depth of these stories and sacrifices of Filipino soldiers. Is that right?
Yes. I am born and raised here in Jacksonville. And I started the project and I was photographing the Holocaust survivors. And, you know, you get older, you realize how important it is to learn where you come from and who you are. And I thought, wouldn't it be great for me to do something for my culture? And I recently saw a headline about how these Filipino-American World War II soldiers were recently recognized as war heroes. Mm-hmm. Back in, was it 2016? Mm-hmm. And they had been fighting for decades for equality. And a lot of people do not realize during World War II, the Philippines was a U.S. territory. and Roosevelt recruited them to fight for the United States, and in return, they were promised all the benefits of being a soldier, a U.S. soldier. And it was Truman who signed the Rescission Act and basically stripped all of those.
He signed the what act? President Truman?
Truman was the Rescission Act, basically stripping all of those promises from these soldiers. And it wasn't until, I believe, 2009, they received a one lump sum payment for those benefits. And I mean, these people just were now recognized, mm-hmm. and they're in their 90s. So I thought, wouldn't it be great for me to, I contacted the Bataan Legacy Organization in California, who is working to get this history taught in schools. It was recently been approved to be taught in 11th grade in California, and they are working to get it taught all over the United States. And I was, you know, when I was growing up, it was a very, I think it was like one sentence, a small paragraph. And mm-hmm. I probably would have enjoyed and had more interest in history if I had learned about this.
This is amazing how these Filipino World War II soldiers were literally written out of history. They fought and died under the command of American generals against the Japanese in the Philippines. In exchange for their service, as you said, they were promised American citizenship, full veterans' benefits, but then President Truman reneged on this offer. There were 200,000 or so who survived the war, but only a few thousand were able to get their benefits before he retracted the promise. Was that just due to anti-Asian sentiment at the time?
That's a good question. I have no idea. They fought and they said, well, thank you, and moving mm-hmm. on.
And so very, very late in the game, as many have started to pass away, they've finally been able to successfully get what was promised to them. And what's so cool about your project is mm-hmm. that you had already documented the stories of Holocaust survivors yep. who live in this area with these incredible portraits and photographs you took of them. So you decided to do the same thing with Filipino veterans.
Yes, and it has brought me to South Florida, South Carolina. I traveled to San Francisco. I basically have made it my mission to photograph them as many as I can. A lot of them are in their 90s, 100 even. I photographed a gentleman in Cape Coral who's 100 years old. And mm-hmm. they, you know, reality will not be here much longer. And I feel it's very important to preserve their story and let people know. And that's really what my whole project is about. I want people to see their photos and read and learn more about their life and their history.
And when you got to meet some of them, I'm sure they had some interesting anecdotes to share with you.
Yes, it's pretty amazing. One of the Pat Gagne, who I photographed, he lives here in Jacksonville, Orange Park, Florida, and was the pioneer. One of the pioneers of he lobbied for many years, and just to hear him speak, and when you see these gentlemen and you see, your really changes your perspective on life and how full of a life they've lived, and it's amazing.
Something else that I think that's important to mention is that Jacksonville has one of the largest Filipino American communities in the region.
Yes,
isn't that right?
Yes,
one of the
yes.
biggest in Florida, if not the biggest.
Yes, it is definitely. I think it is the biggest in Florida.
And what brought that about? Do you know?
I believe it's because of our military bases here.
The military connection.
Yes, yes. And and also it's hot and it's very similar climate to the Philippines. So
it felt like home
yes,
for a lot of people.
Yes.
And
mm-hmm.
so you grew up in Jacksonville.
Born and raised.
So you grew up with one foot in this community, but also as a U.S. citizen, an American kid, went to local schools.
Yes.
What was that experience like for you?
For me, I always thought of myself as an American. Honestly, I never really thought about it until recently because of all of the controversy with immigration. And I'm like, what? Wait a minute. I am also Filipino. People do not see me. People that don't know me wouldn't see me as an American if they didn't hear me or talk to me or get to know me. So that really made me sit down and think a lot about who I am, where I come from, and how did I get here? And that was also another inspiration for me, and to think about how did I get here, and how I got here is because my uncle, he was joined the military and was able to bring his family over, and that's how I got here.
So your uncle brought his sister or brother with him, and that's how you were born here?
Yes, yes. They are a family of 11. And when I read his retirement speech, and it talked about how he, when they were in the Philippines, they couldn't make ends meet, but he had the opportunity to join the Navy, and the family was able to see the light. And I thought, wow, that is amazing. And for me to be here, you know, in Jacksonville, go to school, don't think about these things. And to read that was so touching to me.
Have you ever been to the Philippines?
I have several times.
And what was that like for you?
It was amazing. I love it. I think one thing people, when you go there, you see generosity. I'm sure you hear this all the time, but they are the most hospitable, nicest people. And it made me, what I took from there is you really don't have a lot, need to have a lot to be happy.
Yeah. Now, you're well known around town as a really talented photographer. People come to you to get their headshots done and other, maybe a wedding or whatever they need you to do images for. This was a different kind of project for you than what you normally do.
Yes, it's definitely changed. I would say one of the most important projects I've done. It is a personal project. It's changed my life. It's changed the way I look at life. It changes the way I look at people. I'm just happy and excited to and honored to photograph these people.
Now, you recently showed the Faces to Remember project at the Yellow House Gallery in the Cork Arts District in Riverside. And what was that like?
That was a wonderful experience. Hope McMatha, she was generous enough to let me do a preview show. And one of the gentlemen that I photographed, Pat Gagne, who was 97, he actually came to the gallery and took his photo with his picture and brought his entire family, four generations, to see his portrait. And I would say that was probably definitely the proudest moment in my photography career. I've been doing this for about 16 years, and it was surreal. It was amazing.
That's so great that you could close the circle that way, and he could see himself represented that way.
Yeah, I think his great grandchildren were there, and I don't think they didn't realize how much he had done and how important he was to changing history. And until they saw his photograph in the gallery, and they said, "Where are we going? What are we doing?" Mm-hmm. And I believe his mother showed him like a post on Facebook. And I guess because it was in Facebook, it was real. And so she's like, oh, can I share that with my teacher? And she was 11 years old. And then she came in and saw his photograph, and she was just blown away. So it was amazing.
It is amazing. Go to thefacestoremember.com. Agnes Lopez, such a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. In a moment, Sulzbacher Village opens its doors on the city's north side this week. We'll tell you about that right after this.
Community Hospice and Palliative Care. Since 1979, the compassionate guide for more than 200,000 patients facing advanced illness in Northeast Florida. Today, serving 16 counties, including yours. Available 24/7 to help you and your loved one. More at choosecommunityhospice.com. Westminster St. Augustine, an active senior living community located in World Golf Village, offers residents maintenance-free living with access to golf and tennis, dining, housekeeping, and 24-hour security, plus supportive and healthcare services. More at westminsterstaugustinefl.org.
On the next Fresh Air, Ronan Farrow talks about his Pulitzer Prize-winning reporting on how Harvey Weinstein sexually harassed and assaulted actresses. We'll also talk about attempts to suppress the story by threatening Farrow as well as those actresses. And we'll discuss his new book, War on Peace, The End of Diplomacy and the Decline of American Influence. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Congressional investigators say hundreds of millions of dollars of opioids like fentanyl are coming into the U.S. by mail.
How many more people have to die before our own postal service takes the measures that we know can be taken to be able to stop these poisons?
I'm Audie Cornish. Why opioids are so easy to order by mail and so hard to stop? This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
A dystopian classic has jumped to the screen again. Fahrenheit 451 has been turned into movies, a radio drama, a stage show, and even a computer game. What keeps it coming back? The Movie Club reviews HBO's adaptation of Fahrenheit 451. Next time on 1A.
Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour, a new Jacksonville housing development is set to open this week that blends temporary crisis shelter and permanent low-income housing. And this is mostly for women and children. The ribbon cutting is set for tomorrow at the new Sulzbacher Village. It has dozens of permanent units to shelter women and kids. And it's a reflection of Sulzbacher's housing first philosophy to get people who are without shelter under a roof. Cindy Fonkasser is president and CEO of Sulzbacher, and she's here now. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
It's so good. It's so good to see you. And of course, the majority of clients at Sulzbacher are women and children. So This makes a lot of sense.
Yes. And it's sad to have to say that, but the fastest growing segment of the homeless population nationwide is women, families with children, and 90% of our families are single mothers. So it's sad, but this is the answer. This is the answer to homelessness, and it's permanent, affordable housing.
Yeah, that people can afford.
Yes.
And getting people off the street and into housing so they can begin putting their lives back together, particularly mothers with kids.
Yep.
So this Sulzbacher Village is going to open tomorrow. There'll be a ribbon cutting. Mm. It's located near 44th and Pearl Street. Tell me a little bit about this facility.
It's 92,000 square feet. It's a $20 million project. It's an amazing public-private partnership, Melissa. This is a tax credit project. Low-income tax credits are really the number one way we build affordable housing in America. And those credits are sold to a private investor. So $9.2 million came from a private investor. We raised between $7 and $8 million privately from all sorts of wonderful people that you know and love here in Jacksonville, Florida. And the project, there's 70 units of permanent housing. There's 52 short-term units. We're not calling any of it shelter. The units are all either efficiencies or apartments. Mm-hmm. And eight of them are for female veterans, which is really exciting. Dolores Barr Weaver funded that piece. And so we're going to have special programming there for female veterans. And as you know, because you have this on your show, female veterans have different traumas and different requirements and different needs. So we're going to have wonderful programming. We're going to have an early learning center there with a trauma-informed overlay. So it's a therapeutic approach where we actually have child guidance embedded right in the early learning center. And that's going to be a national model. We had to go all the way to Seattle to find that model. So that's really exciting. The pediatric clinic there is huge. And it's being funded by Florida Blue. And the operating partners are Wolfson Baptist and UF Health. And that's Health Zone 1. And you do a lot of shows about Health Zone 1. Mm-hmm. And you know that it's the worst health outcomes in the city.
Right.
So that's exciting.
You're taking the most vulnerable population in this city and giving them everything they need to get stable, get a life put together. And the whole idea of housing first seems so obvious, but it's taken such a long time for this country to come around to this. Why do you think that is? You know, if you want to end homelessness, put people in homes.
It seems so simple and so commonsensical, and yet somehow we don't fund it. There is a crisis in this country around affordable housing, not just in Jacksonville, but all over the country. You know, affordable means that 30% of your income goes towards rent and utilities. If you're paying more than 30%, then it stresses your family. And so Florida, unfortunately, is the worst state in the nation for affordable housing for our lowest income people. Close to a million people, 911,000 of the poorest of residents are paying way more than half of their income for rent and utilities. You cannot make it on that. Either you're not eating or you're not paying your bills, but you can't make it on that.
And this village is a drop in the bucket compared to the need out there, as we all know. But it is opening tomorrow. The ribbon cutting is set for 10 a.m. tomorrow.
Yes.
Everyone's invited.
Everyone's invited.
Yeah.
We've been talking about this, you and I, for years. So it's so exciting that it's finally really opening.
Well, kudos to you. And thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
The ribbon cutting coming up tomorrow morning at the new Sulzbacher Village. And that will mean homes for dozens of women and their children. And that's our show. Thanks for listening. 1A is up next with the 1A Movie Club as they go see Fahrenheit 451. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCTFM Jacksonville. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. If you're listening to our rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock, just stay tuned for Electro Lounge. Thanks so much, and have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.